Content warning. This episode contains spoilers for Jessica Jones Season 1 and The Avengers, discussion of the ongoing fires in the North American continent, discussion of violence, including death, abusive and controlling relationships, and child abuse, ASMR slurping sounds, and discussion of drug use.
It's almost like Daredevil came first, and then everyone's reaction to his suit then made sure that nobody else would get their canon outfit.
Right.
I don't know what they did for Iron Fist, and I don't care.
I don't either.
He's like white boy stuff, so that's all I know about him.
I live in a state that's on fire.
I'm your parent, and I'm so proud of you.
And I'm Jessica's unopened sense of shame.
And welcome to Will It Homestuck, a podcast where we put media in the Homestuck blender to see what comes out. I'm Bucky. I use he, here, and they, them pronouns. And you can find me at Will It Homestuck or RADDIFFERENT at Twitter. It's rad different at Twitter or Will It Homestuck.
I'm Danny, and I use they, them pronouns, and I'm the transcript writer, and you can find me in the Will at Homestuck Discord, because that's the only place I want to be found.
I'm Janiyah. I use she, her pronouns, and I can be found on Twitter at @AltUniverseWash.
And this week, we're returning to Jessica Jones Season 1 to put them... I was going to say crazy kids, but none of them are, like, even remotely kids. Them crazy adults in a spurb session. Let's go around and let's read back the classbacks that we gave to everyone last time. All right, so our classbacks from the last episode we recorded were Jessica Jones as a Durst dreamer and a maid of doom.
Trish Rocker as a Prospect dreamer and a sylph of hope.
Luke Cage, a Prospect dreamer and a knight of time.
Malcolm, a Prospect dreamer, page of light, role-playing a knight of void.
Simpson, a Durst dreamer, and he is a prince of blood.
Jerry Hogarth, a Durst dreamer and a witch of void.
And finally, Kilgrave, a Prospect dreamer and a lord of heart. How are y'all feeling about this session being a human session? Because, like, we have that as an option, and they all have superpowers, but we could easily also give those as troll abilities, so I think we could go either way.
I'm very much on board with it being a human session. That's how I'd always kind of envisioned it when I was thinking about this.
Yeah, I also agree with a human session.
Yeah, I was attempting to justify it just then, but like I don't see a reason to like make it a troll session.
Yeah, there's no particular benefit we get from doing that.
So we've got our humans. How old do we want them to be?
I would say that they are at or near their ages in canon, and I have a reason for this. And I don't know how to naturally work in my reason, but I would say that they're adults.
We can just, like, table your reason for when it comes up naturally in our exploration, I think.
I don't know if it's going to come up naturally, but yes.
We'll find out.
We will.
I agree, if only because, like, I think off air, you and I have had this discussion, Janiyah, but like, there's no reason for the way that these children in Homestuck behave for them to be 13. Like, they act like they're a bit older. I don't mean that in a weird way. I mean that in the sense that, like, it does, like, 13-year-olds don't act like this, but 16-year-olds do. And in the Alpha's case, like, yeah, 16-year-olds act like this, but the sort of melodrama that they're sort of up to, that sort of relationship drama, could definitely extend well into, like early adulthood, depending on like to mid adulthood, depending on what kind of rom-coms you enjoy to consume or how many r/am I the asshole posts you like to consume as like an adult. But why not adults? And the answer is no reason. They're allowed.
Okay. The only other thing I'd think about is, do they have like powers in this world, or would that be a god tier situation? Because I don't see Maid of Doom translating very well to super strength. It'd be more like humans with powers and humans without powers, sort of like how Bloodcast in Trolls, some of them have special abilities and some of them don't. We could tie that into Homestuck, or we could like toss their powers.
I don't see a reason for them to not be allowed superpowers, because the trolls are allowed superpowers, and that's just baked into who they are. Like, that's not a part of the game stuff. Like, trolls just are like that.
Going God tier, for example, seems to come with just kind of some generic super abilities. Like, you seem to be, you can fly, you're more durable than normal, you're probably stronger than normal. Like, it doesn't go into it a whole lot, but there's definitely implication that you're getting some kind of like stock standard super abilities just by being God tier.
Especially because it's a state, like it's a game state that you've reached, that you've ascended to. You've just like unlocked that particular skill tree because you've gotten that far in your progression. So like you're right. Like not only is it some generic power-ups, but it's like some specific, like you've cleared level 50. Now you unlock the God tiers and you start ascending through the God tiers, and then you can hit the top of your God tiers and break through to your ultimate self is kind of the progression that we've been led to believe is happening.
So basically Jessica Jones is a Maid of Doom who's using strength as her dump stat.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, we mentioned off air that like they're all probably gonna have fist kinds, as Danny put it, but like she in particular, like she punches shit, uh-huh. And she punches shit good, and she throws stuff and she jump good.
She
and
does.
All because good muscle. The next question that we've been sort of dancing around is like suburb. In the mythos that we're given, it takes the form of a video game, specifically because that's how the humans on Earth A in 2009 that play this game interact with the mechanism to recreate a new universe. Is it still a game in this, or is it something else?
Since Jessica Jones was set like immediately after the Battle of New York in the first Avengers movie, I think it might be like an almost alien abduction sort of thing, where they just go off and do their own thing. But I'm not positive on that. That's just the thing I came up with just now.
For my interpretation, it doesn't especially matter what form Suburb takes. So I would say, yeah, sure, it takes the form of a game. I think that fits the contemporary setting pretty well as far as things go. But for my particular take on it, it doesn't really super matter.
Yeah, I guess let me rephrase. The video game sort of situation that they end up in, like after they enter, I think should stay the same. But yeah, how do they get involved or get pulled in? What's their entry method? Because like they could boot up a video game, but they could also like the whole world could have been sucked through that portal at the end of the Avengers instead of the Avengers winning. And like now everyone's in their own little sessions, because like that would help to answer the question of how does this show exist in the same spaces like, say, Luke Cage or Daredevil or the Avengers movies or Captain America the Winter Soldier, a movie we've already covered. And it could be the same as there are multiple Suburb sessions originating from Earth A. We just happen to see the only viable one.
That ties in really well to where I was going with this. So I would say that the original like inciting incident would be that Suburb basically takes the place of the Tesseract as an artifact in the original like MCU kind of initial continuity. And then either we're looking at the outcome of a whole bunch of sessions that have kind of merged together, or we're looking at the outcome of a session where there's a big portal and all or most of Earth or most of the population of Earth has then gone over to that like post-game construct.
I have another sort of theory, like, yes, that could have happened, but like specifically inside this session, instead of like an RPG game, like where you go around and kill monsters, this is more like a mystery sort of game where like it's a whodunit. So that would explain having a Killgrave and why they're all trying to track him down.
I think this is an appropriate time for me to introduce my particular take on this session. I don't think we're looking at a suburb session exactly. I think we're looking at the aftermath of a suburb session. Basically, I think everything that's happening within, like, the continuity of Jessica Jones, not the overall MCU, is essentially an epilogue continuity, where we're looking at where the game has already happened, we're in the new universe, and now these are people who went through the game session already, got their powers, and now they're living in a world where the game is over. That's my take on it.
That is interesting.
That plays into a lot of the themes of Jessica Jones. Like, a lot of the quote-unquote action kind of did already happen. Like, we get a lot of action in the series itself, but, like, the things that defined our characters to make them who they are already happened, in some cases, a long time ago. So, yeah, I vibe with that. They could have... If we give Kilgrave his lord powers, like, he could have very easily had the sort of power to control Jessica in a suburb session.
And we know that, like, in suburb sessions, there's a lot going on. Like, it's once you get to your land, it's not like you necessarily are going to immediately move on from there. Like, it can take a while to build up to the level you need in order to finish the actual game. So there's definitely time for some of these background events to have happened.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I like that. So I guess if they're in their post-game state, what happened at the... What was their reward at the end of their session, and where are they now?
Their reward was not getting murdered by aliens, I guess. Congratulations, you didn't get murdered.
They've got to be on a planet where they're all existing relatively similarly to in canon, like in some sort of society, in a city. Well, they don't have to, but it'd be like, it kind of makes sense that they'd be like in a world that's sort of recovering from the end of a game.
In Jessica Jones, people are still like really surprised when they encounter someone with superpowers. Like, they make note of it. It's like, oh, it's someone different. Let me go get a consult.
They're definitely aware of the powered individuals. Like, they obviously the whole invasion thing happened, but I would argue that maybe you're looking at a few different sessions that have interacted but are now coming together for the first time, having with the game being done. Like, I would say that Jessica, Trish, and Kilgrave are probably all in the same session. And then I would say Luke, Malcolm, Simpson, and Jerry are all probably from different sessions, because none of them really interact with each other prior to the start of what's happening in Jessica Jones, except for Jessica, Trish, and Kilgrave.
How about this? We know that you can kind of travel in between, like, the game's still in the medium. You can travel outside of the medium through the furthest ring into other mediums. So let's say that the MCU as Earth, as we've put it, the whole thing is sucked into the Chitauri portal at the end of Avengers. And that's what kicks off everybody entering the session. So we can kind of, like, that's where the MCU sort of started to branch off anyways. We have a bunch of stuff that happens pre-alien invasion, and then we have a bunch of stuff that happens post-alien invasion. And that's kind of a dividing point for the MCU as a whole. So we can say, after the whole Earth got sucked in and all of these different sessions were started, but all of these different sessions were started in such close proximity to each other because everyone entered at the same time that it's relatively easy for a player, even not in a ship, to exit their medium, fly for like a few hours, and end up at the edge of a different session. So that all of these sessions are sort of, they are independent of each other, but it's pretty easy to leave your session and go fuck with other people's. So we have personal journeys, but we also have a way for everybody to sort of interact with each other and explain how we can have, like, Daredevil and Luke Cage and Kilgrave coming in and out, and Kilgrave being a masterclass, and other assorted MCU shit, because they're just kind of in a, like a very jam-packed sort of frog.
Yeah, I think that that works really well. And that also ties in really well to the fact that you've got the other shows that show other parts of what happened before. And also you've got a lot of backstory. Like every single character's got a ton of history in the show itself. And I think that that basically is like, well, that's what happened during their session, where they're all kind of like interacting with each other to different degrees and in different ways.
It's almost like the entire human world was like put on the same Skaia, but like some people who had powers, they were off doing their own missions on their own little planets. But like for the most part, everyone was still on the same Skaia, you know?
I think they all have to be separate sessions of separate Skaias because I think it's like these are all different sessions with different viabilities. So like some people have to leave their sessions and go to other places. And that's why it's conceivable that like a bunch of people could have teamed up, all gone to one place and gone through a winning session's door and ended up in the same end game.
Also, I think you could use some of the elements of their backstory to inform the kind of session they have, like in some cases where you know enough about them. Like I would argue that Kilgrave came from a doomed session. Like we see all these, the way his past is portrayed is like this unremittingly negative thing with his parents, even though they turns out they were trying to help him, but as he perceives it, where he's like, he's always trying to escape from it. That seems like a very doomed session kind of thing going on there. Like there's no outcome at the end of his session other than things just don't ever get better or they don't change. And like, it's his fault, but that's part of the thing about a doomed session is it can be made that way by your own actions. And I think that like his is a good case there, where he hops into the other sessions because that's his only way to move forward.
Assuming he gets something as bullshitty as Caliborn's session, it'll also be a matter I'm going to assume that he gets his sort of god tier powers. Like maybe he went in with his guardians or something and like, oh, here's an interesting thing. Maybe Kilgrave's session as a master session was isolated enough that time worked differently there. So he went in as a kid with his guardians and he came out an adult with Lord of Mind superpowers and then flew out far enough, like expecting to just go off into the void and like just desperate for escape, and then ended up in Jessica and Trish's session right off the bat or something like that.
I really like that. That works really well, and it helps to like, it fits into his character really well. Like it's his general, like, I don't know, the way he acts in general, the sort of like desire to make reality conform to what makes him happy and all of that. That's a good take. I really like that.
Here, I'll add one more little itty bit to it. Because his session is a master classes session or a master session, and because he has to have undergone some sort of like bullshit trial, whatever happens, it like forms a black hole in the middle of his session. He gets sucked in just long enough to age him, and it's exactly that long for him, but it's like, I don't know, hours or minutes or something for every other session. And so he's still just as close by, but like he gets some kind of bullshit in a session. It was doomed, and he got all his god tier powers, and he should have been sucked into that black hole, and he should have like been wiped out of existence because he took a choice that like failed, and it didn't.
I would go with Luke Cage because we've got a lot of information about him. I would say that he had a session that was ultimately successful, where he and his wife were able to come out of it into maybe his taking place slightly before Jessica's session, where they come out into Jessica's session, and then everything that happens within that continuity happens. So he has like an independent session that is successful, that it is essentially informed by the events of his first season, because that's like his origin story. So there we see like him getting the god tier powers and him having to confront various enemies and overcome all that. And that comes out at the end with, because that series, the first season wraps up in a fairly like tidy way, of course, with a little bit of sequel bait. But
I have a theory, but it requires Kilgrave being a cherub. Dun, dun, dun. So I think he is, like, in a masterclass, but I think that he had a muse of mind that was against the Lord of Heartness that he was doing. I think it was Reva. And he had to kill Reva to go forward.
Oh, I was about to say that Reva had to be a space player in Luke's, in her and Luke's session, so that her and Luke's session was viable.
I would see Reva as being interacting with Kilgrave after he's left his session, just because, like, the only interaction we see is at the tail end of Kilgrave and Jessica's interactions. Like, she comes in as an aspect of what they're doing, but not as, like, a central figure in it.
I still like Claire as the space player for every single session. It's just, she's everywhere.
She could still be a space player. She could be the one from, like, the Daredevil session or whatever.
Yeah, she just kind of can't be in every single session in this one, because we've just created tens of thousands of sessions, and that's a lot even for one person.
I would throw her in with Daredevil because that's where she first showed up, like, chronologically. And she had a bigger role in Daredevil than she did in pretty much any of the other series.
As a space player, she'd be able to hop around to all the different places and heal everyone. It'd be hilarious. That's her power. She hops around all the sessions and she heals them.
I would argue that also all the characters have God-tiered as well, except maybe Jerry. I'm unsure about her, because she's the one that's, like, the least... I know Malcolm doesn't have superpowers, but I feel like he's been through enough that him having died and gone God tier is not completely unbelievable.
Yeah. I don't think it's unreasonable to give Kilgrave a another masterclass counterpart. I don't think I'd go with Cherub, if only because I don't want to have a masterclass be a Cherub again. Like, we've done that before, but, like, I think it's more interesting if he's his own person and he affects somebody else. Like, a muse of mind would be interesting. We could give Kilgrave, like, a sibling or something, or one other person to replace his parents to serve as the muse of mind to go in the session with him, who tries to help him.
I think that could work. I think that the idea of him having, in place of the parents, or having the parents fill a different role. I guess they could still, one or both of them could still be guardians, but then have a sibling as well who serves to be the active, because the guardians are going to be very likely dead. I mean, that seems to be the general, not guaranteed, but that seems to happen an awful lot to guardians.
Or their sprites.
Right, exactly. Or their sprites. Or one is a guardian, one a sprite, or something like that. But to have a sibling that plays off of his class and aspect, and then is the one that tries to help him, and then gets blamed, and things are twisted around, like the parents were in the show itself. I think that's a really interesting take.
Yeah, I think it would also play a little bit more into, like, the way that Kilgrave could manipulate Jessica in this sort of session, because, like, if these sessions are sort of leading into one another, and you have somebody coming into your session and, like, you sort of realize that if people are coming into your session, or you're going into somebody else's session, like, the people going into a new session have some amount of experience over the people in that session that they can sort of use to go through. And maybe that's how everybody sort of starts to end up in a similar endgame scenario, is, like, if you proceed through enough end gates, you actually get to the end state of this universe. So everyone who plays through this game slowly filters out back into the same, like, maybe the whole Earth, MCU Earth got sucked through, and that planet was just, like, sort of out into the end game, and everybody else had to play through to get to that planet again.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about all the human sessions being a shared sky, like, sky is the end game. You'd get there and then you're done. You don't need to adventure anymore. Or you still can, but, like, your suburb session is done.
There's two characters I'm interested in looking at in particular, as far as, like, what their sessions are like, and that's Jerry and Malcolm. I would say that Jerry, she seems like a void session player, because she's got this very, like, stable but bad way of looking at the world. Like, she wants everything to be the way she wants it and for things not to change. And like she feels like a player that came from a void session and was like very okay with it. Like she instituted herself in the Dursian political system and was just kind of okay with that. And then like she's made her way into this collective session in this epilogue scenario and now is basically trying to replicate that same type of activity. But now she has to deal with the fact that she's not just dealing with like her Carapacians and consorts. She's dealing with like other players.
Is the Witch of Void.
Yeah, and Wendy would be from that session, and she would take Wendy through into the new session, meet a new woman, and be like, "Ha, sucks. Bye."
Right, exactly. And Malcolm, I don't know. Malcolm is interesting because I feel like the take on him might be that he was in a viable session, but that he was forced out of it by Kilgrave. So like he never got to fulfill his ultimate destiny. Like he was able to God tier, like only just, but then wasn't able to continue because this masterclass player comes in and like pulls him out for his own ends.
Maybe to echo some of the plot in the show, maybe after Jessica and Trish completed their session, they came through into Malcolm's and found Malcolm just God tier, and they're like, "All right, let's get ready to go through. This is the last gate we need to go through to get to the end game." And then Kilgrave shows up and like Malcolm is beaten up and Jessica is instantly mind controlled, and Kilgrave takes Jessica and himself through the end game session and closes the door. And then Malcolm has to figure out a way to get into another session to get into their end game to get out. And by the time he catches up, Kilgrave has finished with Jessica and can mind control Malcolm to stalk.
I think Kilgrave probably took Jessica into Luke Cage's session just because he has her and he's controlling her. And that's pretty much how Luke Cage eventually got out of his session. Was his partner died, and then he can go through the end gate now.
Maybe. I saw it as being the other way around, where Luke finishes and then ends up in the same session as Jessica for some reason, or they go into his session. I mean, I think we were establishing that they can kind of like freely move around to some degree at least.
Yeah.
I think Jerry Hogarth's session was like an Ace Attorney session where to finish. She's objection.
she's just Ace Attorney, but on Durst, that's all. And she's fine with
Durst
it.
Attorney?
Yep, that's Durst how she attorney. Got out.
She got bored with it, or someone came in and, you know, messed things up for her, so she had to leave, but I think she's, and it fits in with her class spec really well too.
Hey, welcome to the middle of the episode. This is the bit where I tell you about some cool projects we're a part of, let you know if anyone has any projects they want to share with us, and give you a little spiel about what Will at Homestuck does besides this podcast. First, if you weren't aware, we stream fanfiction from Homestuck and other fandoms every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:30 p.m. Pacific Time on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/willithomestuck. I also try to stream Homestuck fan games on Wednesday mornings and do a chill no-mic stream on Fridays. The keyword being try. Find our full schedule at our Twitch channel. Next, here's some projects we like and an ad break if we have a sponsor.
Hey, we have a musical album we think you'd like to check out. Hit it, JoJo.
Now, after fan outcry and popular demand, the second installment in the Funk McLovin collection is here, Class Act. Class Act will feature songs from the Song A Day project, as well as new original music. And for viewers on Bandcamp, there will be a B-side to Class Act featuring various Funk McLovin cover songs. All your favorites will be there, like Japanese Spider Crab.
The Japanese Spider Crab!
Eight legs on each of my sides, and two nice long claws to boot. I'm the motherfucking Japanese Spider Crab! Don't try to tell me I ain't cute! I'm the longest arthropod.
You're at the ocean, but you're not alone. and many more.
Support Class Act by visiting funkmclevin.bandcamp.com. That's funkmclovin.bandcamp.com, or search for Funk McLovin on Spotify or Apple Music to partake in this experience.
Thanks. I hope you enjoy.
New Game Plus is a Homestuck fan visual novel project that asks, what if Earthsea were communist, actually? The intention is to explore the radical possibilities entailed within the creation of an entirely new world, and how a bunch of teenagers from capitalist societies at varying degrees of dystopia would deal with this new world. Applications for writers, artists, musicians, programmers, and pinch hitters are open from July 25th, 2020 until October 1st, 2020. Please visit twitter.com/HSNewGamePlus or hsnewgameplus.tumblr.com for more details. That's all for now. Let's get back to the episode.
Simpson is an, I guess the only one we haven't talked about Trish or Simpson specifically. I'd say Trish is in Jessica's session. Simpson is an interesting one because we do learn some stuff about his past, and we could use that to inform his session. What are y'all's thoughts on him?
Maybe he and his boys are pulled into a session together, and he leaves that, or he takes his boys in and goes into whatever, or like they finish their session and end up in the end game state where the story is actually taking place and start fucking around people. Because I think if the actual like plot of Kilgrave fucking around the people is happening in like a post suburb session state, then Simpson would come out of the game with probably with his nuke superpowers. Oh, so he wouldn't have gone in with his boys. He would have gone in with the other members of the nuke program,
which is fine. I mean, we can obviously make accommodations for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Where
it leans more into like the comics or something like
that. It was always weird that Kilgrave had like, or not Kilgrave, that Simpson had these two separate groups that he was working with. Like he had his army pals, and then he had the like super serum program that the boys were the army pals. He had the army pals, and he had the super soldier serum program that he left and then came back to, and there was some conflict going on there, and like that felt a little bit bloated IMHO, and I think you could trim that down by just saying that Simpson came into the session, went through some version of the nuke program where he and like all of these other army guys are like jacked up on drugs. You can make it a little bit more like the comics and say that they're all clones. I don't know. Maybe in this, it's like that one vault in Fallout where like it just kept cloning the same person at the end. All he could do was say his own name over and over again. Like maybe.
Oh yeah.
Maybe the session was like glitched and there were just a bunch of Simpsons with all of the same powers in there. And he like, let's just say for like maximum fuck it upness and angst, he killed all of the other ones and then left his session, and he's like trying to blend in, but he's like he's got a screw loose or two because like he murdered a bunch of people who looked just like him and all had similar powers. And like that way we get like some of the comic stuff and some of the like weird fucked up sense of morality that this dude has going on, and we can kind of like bring that in. And maybe that's one of the reasons that he's sort of obsessed with Trish, is like he kind of latches on to her right after exiting his session and then kind of follows her around.
Yeah, I could dig that. And also the clone thing plays in well to the ectobiology construct that Suburb has. So you could make the argument that it was some kind of like experimentation with that to like clone fully grown God tier folks, and it didn't go great, and then everything that happened is the result of that, and he's the only survivor from his session, so his session was also doomed through his own actions, or if not doomed from the beginning.
Counter argument, it's not that he's experimented on after he enters the session, it's that bringing in that many people to Spurb at literally the same moment, kind of glitches out bits of it. So he just got duplicated straight up by the game.
Okay, I like that too. Yeah, that's interesting. And that had an effect on, you know, his mental stability slash the mental stability of the duplicates or something.
Yeah, if you want to be real cyberpunk about it, like what haunts him is he's not sure if he's the quote unquote original or not.
Yeah, I think that plays well into his general attitude in the show. Like, I feel like he's got that kind of vibe going. Obviously not something that was touched on the show because it's not about that, but definitely something that I can see fitting well into his character.
I think that when he had a session that he went in with his army buddies, and then once he got to the end gate, he decided, I actually want to go back. And so he found someone who would give him like bonus extra pill popping powers, like John's blue ectobiology, whatever they were, healing gushers that never got used, and he got to go back through another session. He's a prince of blood. He destroys connections. So killing clones makes a lot of sense. But I just think that he has a session with his boys and he has a session with his special superpowered folks.
I think you might also be able to bring in some of the other like characters through the sprites and the guardians as well. So maybe one of his sprites is like one of his old army buddies or something like that.
Or it's an amalgam of some of them.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true, because we do have that. We do have that option.
Dead dream self. Colonel Sprite. Simpson Sprite. Oh, I hate it. I said it and then I hated it.
I guess, do we want to talk about sprites now then, since I sort of segued us into the conversation?
Well, if we're talking about, let's actually pivot to the way the original works plot works in this post game epilogue scenario, because like the sprites and the planets and the strike specify and that sort of stuff is in game stuff, and we've sort of decided that that's all part of the backstory, and that's not,
yeah,
unless we decide that the sprites come through in some way, which is still something that's ambiguous in the comic itself.
Like, if you wanted to say that some amalgam of Simpson's army buddies is a sprite, I would say that probably came through. But by and large, I don't know that many of their sprites or guardians did come through. I'd say that Trish, her guardian, is her horrible mother who did come through. Kilgrave, I guess you could make the argument for his parents being the guardians or the sprites, and I guess they came through and were then killed. But other than that, like, we don't see a lot of those kind of figures.
Actually, for Kilgrave, if we make up a sibling for him that he killed in this session, that he killed to leave, then he and his sibling each sprited one of their dead parents, for example, when they were kids, and he has both sprite necklaces that he put them in, and he takes them out, or like he loses the necklaces and Jessica recovers them at some point to talk to them, and instead of this, the parents just happening to be in town because they're tracking Kilgrave, they're in the endgame state and somebody brings through these sprite necklaces that they found floating in space, and Jessica and like it's still a little deus ex machina, but so is the parents just showing up in the show. Jessica finds them and it happens to be Kilgrave's fucking parents, and she's like, oh shit, in like the post endgame state.
A worse thing, mom dad sprite times two. Eesh. Bad. I wouldn't like that.
You could also say that I think for Simpson you could argue that like Kozlov was his guardian. Because he was the one that was like overseeing the program.
Instead of a guardian, Simpson just has boys.
Kozlov could be a game construct or like some like a Dersite or something that could be like monitoring the session, that because we've effectively replaced the other members of that program with clones of Simpson. So he could be like a Dersite or something who's monitoring the situation and decided to take this particular Simpson's side.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. I like the idea of of Kozlov being a game construct.
Kozlov Noir.
So the plot on the endgame scenario.
Hell's Kitchen is like the worst Earthsea. Everything is bad there.
So for the plot of the endgame scenario, I would very much like play it straight from like what we're seeing in the show. It's just that the inciting incident is going to be a little bit different because of the game constructs and some of the mechanical elements. But like, I think a lot of the core plot can still hold up. You know, you've got Kilgrave trying to exert his control. I would take it a little further into epilogue-y territory and say that Kilgrave is trying to attain his ultimate self and is ultimately unsuccessful. But like, that's his goal here, because you see him throughout the show, he's trying to like amp up his power and control more and more people. And I would take it a step further and argue that he's trying to get to the point where he is completely aware of everything, including, you know, the narrative constructs that he exists within and is able to control all of that. Like that's the end goal that he has. And then everyone else's end goal is to have him not do that.
Can I hit you with this? So we've had the muse of mind that Kilgrave killed. I think that like whatever is going on with that person, like Jessica must just remind him of them in some way. The direction that I was trying to go with this is Kilgrave has some justification for like why like Jessica needs to be a part of his ultimate self or something like that. He's convinced that Jessica is like his muse or something, like his true muse, not the one that died, the one that will help him be his ultimate self. And she's like, no, there's like, one, I'm pretty sure that's not my title. Two, you're a crazy piece of shit. Three, I don't want to do that. Four, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. And like it fits in well with his character. Like he doesn't have to have like a logical reason to think that.
That's true.
He just thinks that. Like he's clearly demonstrated that he just wants to kind of make things the way he wants them. And like specifics and like people's will and what they actually are doesn't matter to him.
If we wanted to go a little bit funky with Jessica's backstory, it could be that the Muse of Mind was immune to Kilgrave's power and vice versa. And before Kilgrave killed whoever it was, they gave that power to Jessica so that she'd be immune to his power. But she didn't realize it at the time.
Maybe instead of that, I still like that, like the show very explicitly makes it that it's Jessica's decision that makes it her immune to his powers. I think it'd be more interesting if like, yes, the Muse of Mind was immune to Kilgrave's powers, but Jessica just so happens to develop the same sort of resistance for the same reasons she does in the show. And that reminds Kilgrave of the Muse of Mind. And that's why in between when he like mind controls Jessica is super duper in love with her and when he shows up in the plot proper, he's already deduced that. And he's decided that that's why she needs to be a part of his ultimate self. Because she's still alive, unlike the Muse of Mind.
I think that's a good take, because like it helps to explain the fact that you know, he's present with Jessica in what would have been like, I guess, her session with him coming into it. And then after the session is done and Kilgrave's kind of like fucked off for a while, and he's obviously made the connection that she's probably immune to his powers, and then that kind of triggers him going into this whole like, you know, I'm obsessed with Jessica and I'm going to make her part of this, like no matter what.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So we don't need to really do their lands since this is post game.
Yeah. I think we've pretty much done everything that we're going to do regarding the plot. So if we want to do the plants, we could just fucking go ham for a bit.
I just like the idea that all their different sessions are like somehow related to how they play, like Jared being an ace attorney session and Jessica being like a murder mystery session, like Clue. She's just playing Clue in her session, except for she's better at it.
let's say lenses and dive bars. Like maybe it's something like that has to do with her camera and like her occupation, and like instead of booze, dive bars, because like that has like the seedier sort of like grungy sort of vibe that Jessica has going on, and maybe that's where Luke and his wife end up. Like they go through into the new session and they're like, oh lit, we can just make a bar here, huh? Fantastic.
I have another one. I think Jessica might live in Midnight City. Like, would fit her whole aesthetic. She's all like dark and gloomy, and there's always sleuths being sleuthy.
Jessica spends a lot of time on Durst.
Yeah. Well, Midnight City is like because that's a very like the Homestuck session thing.
Yeah, that's specifically Alternia post Reckoning meteor bombing and post Jack Noir founding an entire city.
Right.
That's I like what you're going for, but that is, Janaya is right. That is also a very specific Homestuck thing.
Like have the aesthetics of it.
I was going to say, I think that Hogarth could have something like that going on her version of Durst, where she's kind of like set up her own little like version of it. Because she's settled into like whatever her land is, she's decided that she likes chilling on Durst, and she's just going to do that for the rest of forever or until she gets bored with it.
Oh, maybe her session was a void session, and maybe she somehow did have to exit her session to get into the end game. So somebody, she must have like left her void session eventually, but she did take Durst with her. And it is orbiting the end game MCU Earth that's in the MCU epilogues zone, which I guess is what we'll fucking call it. MCU phase 3 is now the epilogues. So she just hangs out on Durst, and as it turns out, Durst has an entirely different bar exam, and most lawyers now practice from Durst.
That's an awesome idea.
I like that.
So we're I would say that we're just the whole plot is taking place on that version of Durst.
Oh, that's very good. Also, Jerry does dump Wendy for a carapace woman. Like the Pam is a carapace. I want that.
That works. That is absolutely, yes, that's perfect. So yeah, Jerry has brought her version of Durst to the epilogue timeline here, and everything happens on that version of Durst.
Yeah, because maybe a lot of people decide to move there after they've decided that like living on the same Earth but like slightly different is just a little bit too much after what they went through. So they're like, might as well fuck off to Durst.
Right, exactly.
We can all fly there. Like, it doesn't fucking matter.
That works so well because it fits into so many of the like different tonal elements. It even helps to explain the very contracted nature of the way that everyone's always like running into each other.
It's just real fucking like small.
Right. Like it literally is small. It doesn't just feel small. It literally is.
Durst is the size of New York City, confirmed.
Right, exactly.
with the same population too.
Jerry is like, she's from the Daredevil universe, but like the Daredevil people are all practicing lawyers on Prospect, and she's the one from Durst.
Do like that, because like if Jerry brought her Durst over, but I don't think Jerry brought her Prospect over, and like maybe we could say that the Daredevil folks bring their Prospect over, but it's not from the same session. So like maybe there's some weird
shenanigans.
Like there are Darsites and there are Prospectians, but they don't like, none of them have ever met each other before. None of them had the same nobles to like worship or the same mythos baked into their session, and. Like, so those two, the Prospect and Durst, wouldn't mirror each other. They would look different from each other with different prototypings and different outfits. And so maybe those both exist. And like, maybe those are the only two people who actually thought to bring entire planets through. Maybe the Daredevil crew ride, like they unhitch the chain for their Prospect's moon. You know, there's like the moon tower things that are like chains to Prospect and Durst. Like maybe they unhitch theirs and take that into the new sessions. There's a little Prospect, there's a big Durst.
I've got a possibility for you. I would say that in Jessica and Trish's original session, that Trish, you know, she's got that whole like celebrity thing going, that she was for at least a time a celebrity on their version of Prospit, and that she's brought that along because she doesn't want to leave them behind.
Aww. That's so cute.
So we've got the Trish's Prospit, we've got Hogarth's Durst.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, there we go. And that ties things together, because we do have Trish as a Prospit dreamer, so I think that ties together nicely.
Baby Trish, before she god-tiered, was known as Patsy, but after she god-tiered, she's known as Trish.
No, she probably just took a new name once they went through the end game, because she didn't want to deal with like the reputation from her previous session, but she still can't quite escape it because she wasn't willing to let the Prospitians die.
Like, she doesn't like her mother, but she has nothing against, like, her fans as a general concept.
Right.
So, you know, she doesn't want them all to be dead.
I think her session was, like, the end point was getting away from her mother, and that's how she could cross over to the new world.
Yeah, I think maybe that her and Jessica were in a session together, and then Kilgrave comes in after their session, and then Luke comes in after his session. And they all kind of like, basically like a bunch of feeds all coming into one river, where it just slowly reduces until you're at the final epilogue scenario.
Did we talk about Kilgrave enough? I feel like we should talk about Kilgrave, since he's like the main antagonist, as cool as Jerry is.
I think we devoted enough. I mean, like, the most of what we could talk about Kilgrave regarding is like how his powers work, and how his powers work are he got... the same powers he has in canon, but they're specifically Lord of Heart powers because of the reasons we already justified in the last episode.
All right. So do we have other stuff? I think we got it.
I think we nailed it. I think we got that session in and done. I think we made it pretty unique. Like, I don't at all have a problem with like a session that's just a fucking Spurb session. Like, it's just a straight up and down Spurb session, like Spider-Verse was. But like, That was a galaxy brain idea, Janaya, and that really fleshed it out.
I have a giant brain, and I write a lot of fanfic. I was like, because I was thinking about it from the beginning with the MCU, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute, what if this takes place after the session? Like, that would give us, like, we haven't done one of those yet, so I think that's a nice take to have.
We did another one, you guys. Excellent.
I've been Bucky Grant. I currently live in hell, and by hell I mean my state is on fire.
I've been Danny, and I live in Alaska, so I don't need to worry about that for right now.
I've been Janiyah Riley, and I am not currently in the state that's on fire.